I'm John Plunkett, and this is Media Talk. Coming up, Mark Thompson comes out fighting in response to James Murdoch's attack on the BBC. Also in the podcast...
This is the hardest thing I've ever done in my podcasting career, to say goodbye to you in the mornings. But if not this year, when?
It's the end of an era, as Wogan announces he'll step down from his Radio 2 breakfast show. We look at the knock-on effects for Chris Evans, Simon Mayo, Moyles and Jonathan Ross. Plus, BNP leader Nick Griffin is invited onto Question Time. Is it a triumph for Dimbleby or a sad day for democracy? And...
Fringer became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe.
We look at children's TV, past and present, and ask, were the good old days really so great after all? This is Media Talk from The Guardian. Welcome all. In the week Pete and Jordan's marriage was finally annulled, took 42 seconds apparently, we've got a brand new pairing here in the pod, so please, no bickering. Maggie Brown is a Media Guardian columnist and author of A History of Channel 4. Maggie, did you shed a tear for Peter Andre?
No, I didn't, I'm afraid. I think, you know, he's kind of divorced the way he's lived, hasn't he?
And making his debut here in the pod is Mr. Howard Lytton, who is Managing Director of Nickelodeon UK. Howard, forgive me, but Jordan's got a knockers. Are you one of them?
Blimey, I wasn't expecting that as a first question. I'm probably just like everyone else. I think Peter Andre's all right. I think, you know, Jordan does what she does. You know, it's publicity. I mean, I don't know, where does the publicity sort of end and the truth of things begin? And it's all a bit confusing. I'm not really that bothered. My wife loves it all, though, to be honest.
Okay, so. Well, more of that later, possibly. I didn't know you'd be an expert, Howard. I'm surprised and reassured.
Well, my wife, clearly, not me.
Okay, well, we'll come on to the Mark Thompson Pistols at Dawn response to James Murdoch's McTaggart lecture a little later. But seeing as the two of you in the pod are much too young to be considered a Terry's old geezer or gal, here's what you missed on Radio 2 at the start of the week.
I was hoping to break it to you, my loyal listener, more gently. I wanted to be the first to tell you. It's the least I owe you for endless years and countless hours of morning companionship and friendship and good humour and laughter. And your loyalty and support's been a beacon of love in my life. And there hasn't been a morning, no matter how dark and drear, that I haven't had a smile on my face and a song on my heart at the prospect of your company, your marvellous mail, your wit and your wisdom. And it touches me deeply that I've played a part in your lives, for it seems like generations, mothers and fathers who tell me how they forced their children to listen to me in the morning, just as they were forced by their parents. And many, many people, alone and ill or sad, for whom Wake Up to Wogan has been a comfort and a consolation. Well, let me tell you, it'll never match what all of you have meant to me. And this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my broadcasting career, to say goodbye to you in the mornings. But if not this year, when? 5 years? 10? I'd rather leave while we're in love, as the song says. While the programme is the most popular on British radio, while we still delight in each other's company. And so we will, until the end of the year, when my good friend Chris Evans takes over, and I know you'll give him the same love and affection that you've always shown to me.
To which a nation replied, play another record! Yes, it's the news that all togs knew was coming, but dared not speak about. That was Sir Terry Wogan confirming he'll step down from his Radio 2 breakfast show in 3 months' time. He'll be replaced by the station's drive-time presenter, Chris Evans. But Wogan's not leaving altogether. Nope, you can hear him on Radio 2 on a new weekend show in the new year. 71-year-old Wogan presented the UK's most listened-to radio programme for a total of 27 years. What a slacker. Maggie, did he choose the right time to go, or do you think, did he choose the time at all?
Well, I suspect it was a bit of both, wasn't it? I mean, he'd already either declined to present the Eurovision Song Contest or had been sort of shuffled off for that. I think, really, at the age of 71, he'd had a good innings. I actually regarded it as a rather elegant departure, to be honest. I know it sounds really schmaltzy now that we replay it and, you know, one's trying to sort of suppress a giggle or two.
But when it was live and
but when it was live, you know, and this idea that he comes in every morning with, you know, a smile on his face and a song in his heart, these are very nice, cheery sort of images that he conjures up. And to be honest with you, that is what the show's about if you listen to it. I mean, I was listening to it this morning and, you know, one of the songs was Cherish the Life You Lead. And the idea that Radio 2 in any way threatens Radio 1, for example, at breakfast time, is just so wide of the mark because they play such different music and the tone is just so very, very different. So I don't know if Terry will actually take up his weekend slot. I suppose he will. We have to remember Jimmy Young was supposed to be going off into the sort of weekend sunset, and he actually never did. So Terry's a different proposition. He hasn't left with bitterness. That's the real thing. He's left making you as a listener and a fan, if you are a fan, I suppose, feeling quite good about his departure. The other thing is, look at it this way. You're absolutely at the top of the ratings. I mean, it's the right time to go before things weaken, because things can't continue, as even Simon Cowell will find on, you know, The X Factor and Britain's Got Talent.
Howard, are you a Tog?
Well, I probably am technically, but I'd like to think of myself as more of a Chris Evans kind of man myself. But Terry Wogan's kind of national treasure, isn't he? I mean, you know, who doesn't love Terry Wogan? I mean, he's got that great voice. You know, it's just part of the kind of, it's like Birdsong in the garden. He's just kind of Terry Wogan. So, you know, I'm going to miss that. But
it's a very funny show, and a lot of it comes down to the very funny listener emails. And it always strikes me, I always wonder how much those have been pre-prepared, how much are written by the production team, and is his audience really that funny? But presumably they are.
I think it's a mix, don't you? I mean, that's why it looks so effortless. Of course, he's got a production team behind it, and Paulie and all of the people. And
he's,
you know,
so professional, isn't he? I mean, he just has, as Maggie said, years and years and years. I mean, a consummate professional. He makes it seem... elements will be off the cuff, and elements that are prepared makes it sound like it's kind of off the cuff. So it's a real knack to be able to do that, isn't it? I think
there's a giant shadow behind me, and it's in the shape of Chris Evans, one of our contributors to the blog. Mr. Bill Dore said, dreadful news at the prospect of Evans taking over. What is it with Evans? First he ousted the great Johnny Walker, now the legend that is El Tell. I'm sorry, but if you've enjoyed listening to the Togmeister all these years, I think this chap's a fan, I hardly think that Evans will be your cup of tea. Just watch the listener numbers plummet. Now, Maggie, you said it's a bit of a nonsense that Radio 2's competing with Radio 1, but commercial radio has got the fear that maybe they'll compete with each other for listeners. What do you make of Evans at Radio 2 Breakfast? It would have been a decade ago, you'd have laughed at the prospect.
Well, I have been listening to his drive time show very often when I'm driving between London and Wales, and it's not what his breakfast show was. I mean, it's become a very cheery, happy-go-lucky programme with something, although this sounds strange, something, but not completely, something of the tone of the Wogan show. So I think that I've always thought he was being groomed for that slot. It hasn't surprised me at all. And people forget as well that the two men have a huge respect for each other. There's no bitterness between them. In fact, Chris Evans thought that Wogan was being underused by the BBC, and if you recall, about 5 or 6 years ago, he tried to launch him on a radio, on a Channel 5 morning chat show.
Terry and Gabby show, yeah.
Terry and Gabby Roslin. So, in a sense, I see it as a kind of natural progression, and no one is going to inherit Terry Wogan's mantle, because he is Terry Wogan, and that's the definition of a star. The reason people are big stars and loved is because they are themselves, and you can't replicate them. That's why they get paid huge amounts of money. But I don't think there's anybody else who could have been more suitable at this point in time, believe it or not, than Chris Evans. I mean, the hard boozing, up all night, boasting, crashing fast cars, car crash of a life, Evans, belongs to the 90s. He's calmed down a tremendous amount.
Do you think pre-Saxgate Jonathan Ross would ever have been a contender?
I think he would have been. And, I mean, clearly, one of the tricks of running radio shows or running any big channel is actually the succession planning. And that's another aspect of this week which I think is really good. For once, the BBC seems to have got it more or less right. And there hasn't been this sort of terrible sense of, oh, God, you know, Ed Sturton's been, you know, bounced off the Today Show for Justin Webb. All of those kind of things that do happen so often at the BBC. So, I think this one looks quite good, although it's going to be hard for Chris Evans to take
over.
So
it's a hard act. Well, I mean, I agree with you, Maggie. I think, you know, Chris actually, he's a sort of milder version of his sort of younger self. I mean, he's a bit more chill. I like listening to his drive time as well, like you. And I don't think it's going to be such a huge change, but as you say, very different individuals.
And the knock-on effect, of course, is Mayo widely tipped to go from 5 Live to Radio 2 Drive Time, because he doesn't want to go to Salford when 5 Live goes there. And then who takes over from Mayo on 5 Live afternoons? Possibly Mark Radcliffe or Richard Bacon?
I mean, Mayo is a fantastic broadcaster. He's so intelligent, and his show on Fridays with Mark Kermode is really, really good. And I've also been on the show, which is I've seen how fast he reacts, and he's a fantastic broadcaster. So he'd be absolutely wonderful for Radio 2. One of the good things about the BBC is that after the Killing Fields in the sort of 90s, when they sacked a lot of very able presenters, they suddenly saw sense. and they started moving people across the networks. And so this has given them a reservoir of really good talent that they can pull in and draw in for various slots. And that's another factor in this. So you can easily, well, not easily, but you can see, it's like a chess set now, moving pieces around. And it doesn't seem as if you're outside of the game. You're still playing the game, if I'm making sense.
Okay, we'll leave the game there. I think it's checkmate to Maggie Brown. Let's leave the wireless for a while and look at a few of the other media headlines from the past 7 days. We'll start with Mark Thompson and Sir Michael Lyons. The BBC's Batman and Robin have come out fighting in response to James Murdoch's call to cut the licence fee and make the BBC much, much smaller. Media Guardian editor Jane Martinson's been speaking to the Director General, who sent an internal memo to all of his staff earlier this week saying Murdoch Jr. was desperately out of touch. Thompson's also starting a wide-ranging strategic review of which activities the BBC should focus on in the future. Let's hear what he had to say to Jane Martinson.
I think the idea of a BBC which is more focused on delivering to the public what the public itself expects fundamentally from the BBC, quality, excellence, independence in its news, reliability, trustworthiness, absolutely yes. And I think we are heading towards a world where, because of the way technology is advancing, we may be able to do it in ways which require a narrower range of services. For example, we're already at the edges. Our red button service, the interactive citizen television, we are just beginning to reduce some aspects of that service because so many households have got access to interactivity via the web and via their mobile phones, that first rather brilliant form of interactivity may need less services in it than it did in the past. Still a core service, but less than we did in the past. And I think, you know, the key thing is we're on a migration from an analogue world to a digital world. Some people want us to step backwards, and some people would say, well, you know, you really should just be a television and radio with just a handful of channels. Mm. I have to say, that's delusional. We're already a digital broadcaster, and the web is as much of a part of what we do in our future as television and radio. So, you know, we're not stepping backwards. But as we move forward, having a greater care and greater focus on how we fit in with the rest of media, given the enormous challenges other media players fit, and also recognising that in this post-switchover world, the public have got many new ways of getting the content, may mean that, yes, we can offer a set of services which are of more value but of less breadth.
So fewer services?
Potentially.
So, Maggie, it's a bit like Bob Dylan's Never Ending Tour. It's another review at the BBC. It seems to go on and on.
It certainly does, although we're told this is going to be relatively quick. I suppose it's all timed in with the election, I mean, because the BBC is an intensely political being. 2 points, really. What I thought very strange about this past few, 24 hours or so, has been the fact that both the chairman and the director general have felt the need to both come out with a mixture of messages about what's going on. Yet the trust itself is really the body that sets the parameters for the BBC. And it seems almost as if the chairman and the director general are competing for our attention, which I don't think is a really very good thing, because the trust has to take a view. At the end of the day, they are responsible for the BBC. And you do wonder, really, how much objectivity is going to be brought to this exercise if the person actually leading this review, and somebody who's done reviews all the way through his career at the BBC, is actually now dispatched yet again to look at the extent of the empire. And what we know from past experience is that the BBC, even though they promised to do less or to be more public service focused, in the end don't really tend to do that. So it will be interesting. The red button decision, for example, that's already been happening because people aren't really using the content. So in a way, the audience has debated and discussed and decided to move on. The big question really is whether they drop some of their digital services, whether they concentrate back on maybe 2-3 television networks as a showcase, but with the ability to catch up all the time on content you might want or extra content via a broadband portal, the Canvas idea that they're talking about. And the same goes, of course, for their audio and radio services as well.
Howard, as a commercial operator outside of the BBC, what did you make of Murdoch's McTaggart lecture and the response which has finally come from the BBC top brass?
I mean, I've got to be honest, I think that what, you know, Murdoch was touching on, I think he was touching on something that I think is something that needs to be looked at, absolutely. I think he went a little bit too far myself. I think the idea that, you know, I think the BBC is, you know, is massively valuable, and I think there's a kind of a little risk here that we say everyone tends to overreact to something. I mean, I think I'm hoping that Murdoch's kind of statement was there to stir up all the kind of debates that we're having. I just hope that the kind of reaction to it doesn't end up kind of effectively completely undermining the BBC and everybody kind of runs for the hills, and it's sort of somehow it's the beginning of the sort of end in a way of the BBC. I think it's incredibly precious to us, but there are balancing acts, of course, and I agree with Maggie. I think they probably do need to look at, you know, areas. I mean, again, it always gets brought up with things like, you know, should they be in, you know, travel guides and things like that. I mean, is that where the BBC should really be? I, from my perspective as a programme maker, I think they should be piling as much money as possible onto onto the TV, onto content rather. Let's not say television, as we're in this kind of web digital world. I think if they can plough more money into that and less money onto, say, travel guides, fantastic. I know somebody else said this, it did feel a little kind of Gordon Gecko-like, I guess, that kind of, you know, sort of greed is good, you know, for want of a better word, whatever they say in Wall Street, the movie. But it did feel a little bit like that. I'm sure it was all to...
But you know, Howard, you know. I think that by attacking in such a forthright manner, in a sense, he's aided the BBC, because it was so extreme that actually it's roused the even sort of lukewarm supporters into action.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
Maggie, do you think also this review, another review, is that a tacit admission by Thompson that the salami slicing that we've seen before hasn't worked, and that they've really got to take radical action here and look at the future of, say, BBC Three or BBC Four or some of their DAB stations?
Howard was making a really good point here. For example, who in this country can actually fully fund proper drama or children's programming? Very few people can. And the BBC itself has frequently now to look for partners. That there are many areas of endangered content or programming that we can see this deterioration in funding happening in front of our eyes. And so, yes, the BBC is really, really an important patron of all sorts of content that we value. When you think about this cutting of budgets that has been going on, it's been affecting the core services, things like Newsnight, Radio 4, the Today programme, how many people you can send out to make packages for your programmes, proper constructed reports, as well as other types of programming. So yes, it is. If you do have to accept that there will have to be economies, it would be far, far better to focus proper budgets on really, really good programming. You could definitely have a reorganisation of the digital channels, because they are not logical outside of CBBC and News, the News 24, and it's now just called BBC News. Those are logical developments, but almost everything else is illogical, in my opinion.
Well, you can read Jay Martinson's full interview with Mark Thompson in Monday's Media Guardian.
Media Talk from Guardian.co.uk.
Moving on to some other stories, the BBC Worldwide chairman, Etienne de Villiers, is to step down after 3 years in the job. Maggie, I think Howard touched on this briefly, but when he referred to the Lonely Planet guides, but I guess that Worldwide is going to be a big part of the shake-up of BBC.
Well, it always is. I mean, what we forget is that back in 2004, when Thompson came back to the BBC, there was a big review, should they keep BBC Worldwide, should they sell it? Inevitably, because they can't face the thought of losing a potential £100 million plus profit stream, they decide to keep it. And they then decided at that point that, yes, they needed external expertise. So they brought in Etienne de Villiers from Walt Disney. They've now had this period where some of the things that have been done by Worldwide are causing them acute and really huge acute embarrassment. The Lonely Planet guide deal last autumn is a key kind of touchstone mentioned by Murdoch.
That was Worldwide's Jonathan Ross, really, wasn't it?
That it certainly was. The other aspects of it are clearly how far they go in investing in channels, commercial channels overseas, using BBC content but not building the BBC brand. There are many areas. And what I find strange about this is that I don't think the Trust have been very clear about their instructions to BBC Worldwide, because they have already, they say, told them that there'll be a revised remit, restricted remit, but we haven't had it spelled out to us at all. And so this is an area that really needs clarity. But again, don't hold your breath too much, because when it comes to the crunch, the BBC does tend to err on the side of, you know, we hold what we've got.
Also with the BBC this week, Richard Curtis, it's been revealed, is to write an episode of Doctor Who. Now, Howard, Doctor Who's been fantastic for popular family drama. Are you a fan? Are you looking forward to the Curtis episode?
Absolutely. Massive, massive fan of Doctor Who. I was really glad when they brought it back, and I think they've done an amazing job. Yeah, I'm Richard Curtis, I'm sort of looking forward to maybe, I know, Baldrick as the assistant, you know, saying he has a cunning plan or something, maybe, I don't know. Blackadder, perhaps he's going to put in an appearance, I don't know. Or maybe it'll be for like more like Four Weddings and a Funeral, I don't know. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think that's got to be one of the top three successes of the BBC as a whole, I think, in the last sort of year, 2 years. I mean, it's right up there, isn't it? I mean, they've done an amazing job to please so many different agendas and people, the big hardcore fans, the new people being brought in, families, kids, dads, you know, everybody just loves it. And I think it's great. That's the sort of thing that the BBC is there to do. And they've done that so well. I mean, I can't speak, you know, more highly of it than that, really.
And speaking of family viewing, question time. BNP leader Nick Griffin is going to be given a seat on the show. Maggie, do you think is that the right place for him to appear? Are the BBC doing the right thing here?
Definitely, because I don't think it's right to run away from arguments, even if they're arguments that you find distasteful. And this is a party that has collected enough votes to qualify. They have a viewpoint, they have a voice. We don't like it. Majority of us don't, but I think that to do anything else would be undermining democracy.
And Howard, I think the idea that he shouldn't be given a voice there because it might actually encourage the number of people that vote for the BNP is a sort of a sad and depressing view of democracy. It doesn't show much faith in the British public.
I agree with Maggie. I think, you know, I think if you've got a firm sort of democratic kind of, you know, basis for your country, you know, you've got to allow people with idiotic views to stand up and put those views forward so you can knock them down. I mean, actually, so people can see how ridiculous those views are, and actually less people will vote for them, hopefully. That's the outcome that you want to see. But again, it's an incredibly difficult balancing act for any broadcaster, not least of which the BBC in the current climate. You know, they'll be criticised for giving a platform. If they don't do it, they'll be criticised for lack of freedom of speech. So it's a delicate one. But on balance, I think, yes, he should be on there.
Well, there are links to all these stories we've just discussed at guardian.co.uk/mediatalk, where you'll also find the new edition of Media Talk USA with Jeff Jarvis.
Danger Mouse! Amazing Danger Mouse! Astounding Danger Mouse! Justice Giant!
Pineapple under the sea.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Absorbent and yellow and porous.
So your start of a 10 is which one of those shows airs on Nickelodeon? Fingers on the buzzers. Howard.
SpongeBob.
Fantastic, 10 points. I have no follow-up questions, so I'll move on. There are just a few of the shows that some of us have grown up with, especially if you were born in the 1980s. But it's the second week of the new school term, or the first week if your child goes to a fee-paying school, so we thought it was high time we talk about the state of children's programming. Do the national broadcasters still have the resources to cater for younger viewers? Have the likes of the BBC and Channel 4 reneged on their public service duties? And do young kids watch TV these days anyway, or are they too busy on the interweb and their iPhones? Howard, you're the MD of Nickelodeon UK, so you're in a fine position to judge this. What's the state of kids' TV today?
Well, lots and lots of challenges, but I think the general thing, first thing to say is kids are watching telly in big numbers. You know, I think the idea that, you know, kids have kind of given up on telly is one of those kind of, you know, myths that gets sort of bandied around. I think the numbers from last year's Ofcom numbers showed that wasn't the case. But, you know, they have got lots of other things to do. You know, generally, if you're a kid today on one level, you would say, you know, you've got a lot of choice, especially in multi-channel homes, much more choice than you had when I was a kid. So does that mean everything's really healthy? Not necessarily in certain areas. And I think, you know, if you look at factual programming, UK factual programming and UK drama in particular, I think there are sort of problems in those areas, I would say. And I think they've been, you know, highlighted quite clearly in reports by Ofcom recently. Why are the problems in those areas? Well, you know, drama is extremely expensive to make, very, very expensive, and doesn't necessarily travel that well in terms of, you know, international kind of exploitation. Although, things like Hannah Montana and iCarly, those kind of dramas, maybe are disproving that recently on Nickelodeon and Disney. And factual, well, factual's the age-old problem. I mean, we know we've won BAFTAs for factual programming with Nick News in the past, and we do. There's a sort of public service thread that goes through Nickelodeon, if you like, but it's hard to get big numbers for factual shows. And if you're in a kind of cutthroat kind of, you know, overnight world where you're looking at the ratings, you want to deliver great content, but factual stuff's not always going to do it for you. So therefore, you know, it falls onto the public service sector, public service, public providers like the BBC to do more of that. But again, you know, it is a challenge, I think. So I think if you're a kid and you're into your entertainment and your fun and your silliness and, you know, most of the stuff that was on your track there, I think it's pretty good. You've got a great choice. But for the producers of certain genres, I think there are challenges, and the recession isn't helping. And certainly I seem to spend most of my time, you know, persuading shareholders that we have to keep up our kind of content investment. I'd like to think we've done that and we've grown every year I've been there, and trying to persuade shareholders to keep on doing that is challenging. There's no doubt about it.
And how do you do that? Do you tell them that it's good for the brand? Do you tell them that it's just convinces the parents to let their kids tune in?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you have to be passionate about this. You know, it sounds like, you know, stating the bleeding obvious, but, you know, quality content will lead to big audiences, which will lead to success for your channel. It's easy sometimes to think, well, we can just turn the tap off now because we've kind of achieved what we need to achieve. Let's turn it off and let's just kind of roll along and not spend very much money. I think, you know, you either believe that quality content is important or you don't.
And as we heard, Murdoch thinks that the BBC should be rolled back, but it sounds like you're saying that it falls to the BBC to do that kind of quality factual and drama because no one else has got the money to.
I think it's prevalent upon all of us who work in kids' telly to do things that are going to be right for UK kids, and that UK kids are going to get a quality offering. I just think, yes, that the BBC can do more of that stuff and should do more of that stuff, and they do. I think there's an element that we, as Nickelodeon, we probably do more than the other commercial players. But in a way, the good thing for me is, from my personal perspective, we're mandated to do that in a way through our brand. Our brand is about, you know, not just providing entertainment, but providing, you know, information about, like, bullying or, you know, green initiatives around the world, things that kids can do to sort of help the world, help their environment, help each other. That's part of the brand ethos. So when I'm making those cases to my board, that, you know, I'm almost saying, well, it's really important. That may not be as important for other commercial players. And certainly if you look at ITV, for example, I don't think those kind of arguments are being put forward there on behalf of the kids' programming, because they just didn't have if you will, with no disrespect to ITV, but the kind of a philosophy that underpinned why they were doing it, other than we're making money. But I don't think it's the only thing.
They didn't have any of the exploitation of the merchandising or anything that went along with the programmes either. So they seem to have got themselves into a sort of no-win situation where they weren't making money out of their slots, and they weren't making any money out of the programmes that they had either bought in or they had actually produced themselves. It was all of a very badly run, to be honest with you. I mean, the big worry now, actually, is that there's Howard is an honourable exception, and he has a good place, too, on the children's EPG, but the BBC really is the dominant player.
But Maggie, it feels like certainly from the mainstream broadcasters, Kids TV has been put to one side on Saturday mornings from BBC One and from ITV One. It feels that it doesn't get the attention it deserves from the regulator, not from broadcasters, and certainly also from Ofcom.
Well, if you remember, one of the elements of Digital Britain was that there should be a fund to actually subsidise original children's production in this country because of the loss of ITV's patronage and because of the collapse in advertising. And again, some of the effects of, unfortunately, the food, the advertising bans that have affected Cairn Healthy Foods, but it's also affected the revenue that goes into these channels and programmes. So One of the things out of the Digital Britain review was this thought that part of the BBC licence fee could go towards children's programming,
which is being fiercely resisted,
and it does look as if there's certainly a great deal of that it's going to be very problematic for this government anyway to push through something in the teeth of such fierce opposition, and indeed some evidence of public resistance as well. But it does beg the question then: do we actually think children's television production reflecting British values, etc., culture, should be given some special protection or some help? And the consensus view had been that it should be, and that this would help actually Howard's case. But the reality of it looks as if it may not actually happen now, which so I'm rather torn, because I don't think top slicing is a good idea. But I do actually think investment in children's production would be immensely useful. Some form anyway of assistance would be a very good thing.
Yeah. Maggie, on that note, if you'd like to share some of your memories of Newsround, Jack and Ori, Rosie and Jim, or early Biker Grove, then go to guardian.co.uk/mediatalk.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
What's that coming over the hill? It's Football Weekly Live, a special stream show beaming from near-Earth orbit into your computer at 6 o'clock on Sunday, the 20th of September. Ooh. That day, of course, is the Manchester Derby and the Chelsea Spurs ding-dong affair. And as such, Football Weekly will be on hand to recycle other people's opinions as our own, even faster than usual, on all the day's big talking points. We'll have, as ever, a panel of top Guardian writers on hand. We'll have views from the grounds, and we'll have Sid Lowe phoning it in from Spain. You can chip in too, using the message boards or various other methods of communication, email, Twitter, or that SMS messaging business. That's Football Weekly, Sunday the 20th of September at 6 p.m. live. What could possibly go wrong?
We're almost done, but before we go, it's time to share what we've learnt this week. Now, I've learnt that it's easier to follow the wire with the subtitles. On the fourth time of asking, I finally got hooked on the first series. It took me four times to pass my driving test as well, so that clearly says something about me. Maggie, any lessons from this week?
Well, I just thought that I'd have loved Wuthering Heights if it didn't have adverts in it, the ITV drama. I found myself wishing that I'd somehow managed to get myself a DVD before it went out. And that's a rather heretical thought, because how on earth would ITV be able to afford it if it didn't have adverts? But that was that's my overwhelming feeling this
week.
You're
knocking ads with Mr. Nick Jr. in the room.
I know.
How would I love adverts?
Well, we don't have ads in the middle of the Nick Jr. show, so that's one good thing, right? Okay.
Slightly corrected.
There you go.
Any lessons from the week, Howard?
Well, there's only one big lesson from the week, quite honestly, and that's that actually England have actually got a good football team, right? So, nothing else really comes close, I think, to be honest with you. Capello is a god, and I need a ticket to get to South Africa pretty quick. If any of your listeners have any, then please send one my way. Thanks very much.
Guardian.co.uk/mediatalk. My thanks to Maggie Brown and to Howard Litton. Stephen Brooks back in the presenter's chair next week. But for now, let me say that Media Talk's produced by Ben Green. I'm John Plunkett. Thanks for listening.